When we jump on an aircraft, we assume that the pilot is well rested and is completely in control of what's going on. But when you think about it, pilots are working mad hours, and all over the world they're dealing with jet lag all the time. And you wonder, and they're normal people too, when they get off work they must have a drink or two and so forth, drink too much coffee and so forth, and you wonder how they sleep and whether or not our pilots are properly rested. Now, interesting books come up, which have been written by an anonymous A380 pilot. It's called Sleeping for Pilots and Cabin Crew and Other Insomniacs, and there are applications to anybody who works shifts or who needs to sleep at any time that they need it. And I've got Sam on the line from an undisclosed location. Good afternoon, Sam.
How are you? How's it going, Adam?
Good, thanks. Have you had a rest today?
I have had a rest today, and I'm ironing my shirts right now, flying off to Rome tomorrow morning. And so, of course, you know, when you go to Rome, you've got to be better dressed than the locals.
When in Rome,
and
indeed.
So, that's right. So I'm ironing shirts just so that I can cut it with the guys when I get there.
Excellent.
But part of the deal is making sure everything's done before you sleep, before you go to work.
Yeah, right. Because you write this book because you've been in the industry a long time, Sam, and you've seen pilots who don't get enough rest. How much of a risk are pilots taking by not getting enough rest?
Well, I think it's the same with most jobs. The problem is with most of the people who are not getting enough rest is that they haven't been taught how to get enough rest. So they think it's normal. They think their lives are normal. And anyone listening now who's got a child who has an iPhone or some electronic device that stays with them beside their bed at night knows that people have broken sleep for many, many reasons from a very early age. So it depends how you grow up. If you think this is normal, well, then that's you don't think that you're not well rested. Where I'm coming from is that I was an Ansett pilot, and we used to fly the freighter into Perth, getting in about 5 o'clock in the morning after flying from Melbourne. And we'd have to sleep during the daytime. Well, the guys who were flight engineers who used to work the flight engineering panel behind the pilots, they had spent 20 years in the hangar doing night shift, and then they became flight engineers, and they gave us a lot of tips and tricks that you need to do if you're going to sleep in hotels during the daytime. And I suddenly realized recently that there's no old flight engineers telling these young pilots and cabin crew as they come up in the industry today.
So it's
just about time I shared some of the tricks.
Old crotchety pilots instead. How often have you been on a flight with, say, younger pilots or whatever, and they've said to you, I need to have a sleep? How often does that happen?
It happens more than you'd think. The industry has a thing called a NASA nap now. It's controlled rest. I think what the industry realised was that the longer these flights go on and the more automated they are, these people are more likely to fall asleep at the wheel. So if you address it properly and organise it so that people can take controlled rest for 25 minutes, then spark up again, that's safer than having both heads nodding off at the same time.
But wouldn't it be better, though, if both pilots had enough rest and could stay up through the whole flight? Wouldn't that be the best, rather than having periods of time where there's one hand on the wheel, as it were?
Yes, that's what the book is all about, is teaching these people that, you know, adequate rest before a flight that goes overnight, for example, a night flight, is not 2 hours before pick-up time at 11 p.m. Adequate rest is 8 hours. Where you sleep 6 hours and wake up naturally, and then you can operate the whole night.
Because,
and it means that you've got to change your whole lifestyle in order to achieve that.
What are the key aspects of doing that, given how irregular these hours are, and often the times between flights are short, and people have that natural tendency to say, oh, let's go out and have a few drinks after work, when in fact they should be sleeping? How do you get your sleep in that kind of groove?
You've got to plan ahead the whole month when you get your roster. The air crew have this fantastic thing that comes out every month on about the 20th of the month, 25th of the month, called the roster. And it's like a Christmas present where everything you asked for early in the month is delivered to you or not. It's when you sit down and spend maybe 2 hours planning the next month, planning your rest periods before the flight, and working the plan. Plan your work, work the plan, get the adequate rest before you need to go flying, and your life feels better. You feel more in control.
Yeah, but given that these time periods are pretty short when rest is available, how do you make sure you maximise it? What are the key tips that you can give to people, not just pilots, but anyone who is in this sleep deprived situation?
Okay, so if you've planned your work, you know when you're going to need your sleep before the next flight. There's a mandatory amount of time off. So if we go to New York, we're going to be there for 22 hours by the time we get through the airport. So we've got to get into New York. Depending on the time of day, you might want to stay up late and use the sunshine to help you. Stay up as late as you can and go to sleep with the sunset. If you're going east from the Middle East to Australia and you're arriving at 5 o'clock in the morning, you might grab a few hours sleep, but resist the urge to sleep for 8 hours and force yourself to get up and have a lunch sitting beside Sydney Harbour at the Darling Harbour restaurant there in the sunshine, and the sun will help you get your body cycle working so that you can sleep adequately that night and get up early again and fly the next day.
Hmm. One tip you gave me recently was to make sure the room is fully dark, turn off every single appliance, every standby light, every iPad, phone, whatever, and actually have proper darkness. Very few of us sleep in complete darkness.
No, and it takes a lot of effort to do it. You know, in my place here in the Middle East, I have a blackout blinds, blackout curtains. That costs money. Then you're spending time with the guys complaining that there's cracks of light showing, and you obviously can't test it until it's bright sunlight outside. Getting the room fully dark is going to help you sleep. If there's any light whatsoever, it doesn't work. That means putting a jacket over the red light on the LED on the TV at the end of the bed in most motel rooms, putting something or hiding the alarm clock underneath the bed so that you don't get the light from the digital alarm clock, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What we used to do, and I still do, is carry 3 or 4 clothes pegs in my suitcase. And you wouldn't believe how effective 3 clothes pegs are at pulling a curtain together and backing out the room properly.
Okay, it's interesting. I guess the whole thing is to get into that rapid eye movement sleep. And a lot of people think that having a few drinks, that'll knock me out. I've got to get up soon, but this alcohol will get me to sleep. But it doesn't give you that quality sleep that you need.
No. In fact, 2 drinks will be fantastic, and then you'll sleep okay. If you have more than that, say, for example, you're at an Australia Day party and there's a puppy nearby and you're a footballer from New South Wales, and you have more than 2 drinks, what will happen is that you'll fall asleep very, very heavily, and so much so that you won't wake up if there's a fire or a fire alarm or the phone rings. You'll sleep really, really heavily for about an hour or two and then wake up dehydrated and horrible and not be able to sleep for the rest of the night. So, yes, alcohol.
We've all
is
been
very
there. Oh, yeah. The dry horrors in the middle of the night. I mean, it's okay for us, but I guess for a pilot, you know, how do you fake it? I mean, do you have coffee on the flight deck there or amphetamines? What is it?
Yes, well, drugs don't work, and the book goes into all sorts of parts about it. The drugs, the approved drugs and the non-approved drugs like melatonin and these other sorts of herbs that people say affect your sleep. The most you'll get is 2 weeks out of a good sleeping pill. That's all they're designed for, and the manufacturers specify no alcohol, maximum 2 weeks. The problem with the flight crew, if you find something that works, you'll use it forever. I've been in this game for 30 years. If I had a sleeping pill that worked 30 years ago, I'd still be using it every day. That's just not acceptable. You have to get away from the drugs, change your lifestyle, learn to understand your body clock, learn to use coffee so that it helps you when you need it to finish a night flight, to start drinking coffee early before you feel tired because it takes 25 minutes to work. So you need to have a geographical reference and say, oh, well, last flight, 500 miles from destination, I was tired. So now when we get to 600 miles from the destination, I'm going to get a double shot latte, and that'll push me through to the end.
Right. I'm not sure whether you put this because I haven't got the end of it yet, Sam, but you mentioned to me off air that it's even important how you evacuate your bowels in terms of how you're going to sleep. That's important too.
Well, it's not so much how you do it, Adam.
We know how to do it, but when you do it and how long it is, apparently,
yeah,
it makes a difference.
Well, that came from a gastroenterologist who told me that it was it's simple, 9, 9, and 9. It takes 9 seconds, it's 9 inches long, and it happens at 9 o'clock every morning. Now, the problem is when you're doing a jet lag job like this, if I go from the Middle East to Shanghai, and I'm in the underground market there, my 9 a.m. becomes 2 p.m. And at 2 p.m. in the underground market in Shanghai, when I'm looking at buying a nice suit for $150 made in 24 hours, thank you very much, all of a sudden I need to find the toilet. So you've got to plan these things ahead. You don't leave a hotel room in China without the day's amount of toilet paper in your pocket, because you're not going to find any toilet paper in a public toilet in China.
And apparently a measuring tape has to be with you all the time as well. We better leave it on that note. Sam, it's fascinating. Okay, I mean, I guess the thing is this book, Sleeping Pilots and Cabin Crew and Other Insomniacs, Sleeping for Pilots and Cabin Crew and Other Insomniacs, it's not just for pilots. It's for anyone, really, who works these sort of irregular hours. Where can people find it, Sam?
Professionalsleeping.com, or you can go to Amazon. Amazon Australia's got a new Amazon site for Australia. Just go to Amazon.com and go for search Sleeping Pilots.
Indeed.
You'll find it in a flash.
Thank you for your time, Sam.
Thanks, mate.
Good on you. That is Sam, A380 pilot there. He's written a book, Sleeping for Pilots and Cabin Crew and Other Insomniacs.